The Health Fix podcast teaches you how to take charge of your health naturally by giving you the information you need to elevate your health.
Hey, Health Junkies. On today's episode, I'm interviewing Marsha Moran. At 53 years old, she had a stroke. And now she's telling what she went through and how she got the best care and how she got herself back on track by self-advocating. Her book is called Stroke Forward, How to Become Your Own Healthcare Advocate. And I think this is a really important topic because we can't expect others to take care of us. We need to take charge of our health on our own. And being your own advocate is huge, and finding healthcare providers that'll advocate for you as well is double huge. But first and foremost, this podcast is all about what you can do to take care of your health post-stroke, but it has a bigger lesson in terms of taking care of your health overall and being your best advocate. You don't like what's going on with your healthcare, you're not happy, you're not satisfied, you're not getting answers, get those answers. Drive to get those answers. Ask questions. But also, don't forget that you've got to look within, because a lot of times, those answers come with inside you. All right, let's get on with the podcast. Hey, Health Junkies, I have a treat for you today. We're going to be talking about strokes. And a lot of us kind of started to put the stroke on the radar when Luke Perry had a stroke, because let's face it, a lot of folks my age in the 40s and 50s were watching 90210, and like, he was so cute, right? Like that was our crush. And now we're like, oh my gosh, if Luke Perry can have a stroke, maybe I could. And so Marsha and I were just talking about how you can have a stroke at any age. So we'll get into that. But Marsha, welcome to the Health Fix.
Thank you so much, Janine.
So of course, we're going to be talking about your book, Stroke Forward, and how to become your own health advocate, which I'm a huge fan of in general, being your own health advocate. But in particular, I think it's important for us to be talking about strokes because, like you said before we jumped on the podcast, we think about it when someone who is famous dies, and then like after that, things like COVID happen and we forget about strokes. Yeah. So I would love for you to share the statistic you told me about folks who are younger, not just older folks who had strokes.
So 25% of people who have strokes are prenatal to 64. And I think that's a big percentage.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think a lot of people don't even think like prenatal stroke. What? You know, we have this vision in our head, and I have a lot of patients, like I'd mentioned to you, like I have people coming in and they're like, well, I'm not obese. I work out. I eat healthy. How is it possible that I can have a stroke? And I'm like, well, you know, these things can happen. It's, you know.
And actually, mine was not preventable. Mm-hmm. 1-2% of people have strokes like mine, which is a carotid artery tear. And they couldn't tell me what caused it.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Will you share with us your story? Because I think the stories are so important for folks to kind of get in the mind as to what happened on that day. How did it play out? Because, you know, when you think carotid artery tear, you think, oh my gosh, there had to have been some high velocity car accident or some ski accident or something.
Well, I had a car accident, but that was years ago. Okay. So I didn't even think about that. And I don't think that's what caused it, but it was Sunday morning. And I woke up and I felt weird. Mm-hmm. So I texted my friend to tell her I wasn't going to make her breakfast. And I rolled over and boom, the most incredible headache happened. Mm. And despite the pain, I fell asleep.
Wow.
When I woke up, I was paralyzed on the right-hand side.
Wow. Wow.
And I still didn't think stroke. So I rolled out of bed and grabbed the carpet on the floor and dragged myself to the door, which was closed. And I can't tell you how long it was, but I reached up time and time and time again. And finally, it snuck open and I took a break.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
And exactly. I finally started down the hall and I totally ran out of gas. There was nothing left in me. Mm. And I don't know what fell, but something went crash. And my husband came upstairs and he said, "Marcia, are you okay?" And that's the point I realized I couldn't talk.
Oh, wow.
Right. So he called 911 and the paramedics took, I'm going to say 7 minutes maybe. And when they got there to our house, the first one through the door said, "When did she have her stroke?" That's when we knew.
Yeah. Wow. And this was how many years ago?
2014. So almost seven.
Okay. Wow. And so the paramedics already were like, "Well, okay, stroke." And right. They took you in. And what happened in terms of that you can recall in terms of your care? Because I think it's really nice for folks to understand, like, when you get to the hospital, what happens? How is it, you know, worked with? What happens?
Okay. So the paramedics decided not to give me TPA, which is tissue plasminogen activator, because since I'd had the stroke when I was sleeping, they didn't know when it started. And at that time, they were saying that it had to be administered within 3.5 hours. So I was a no-go. So I lost consciousness on the way to the hospital. And when I woke up, I was dressed in a gown. I had a needle in my arm and my husband was there. And I went, "Okay, I'm fine," and fell asleep again.
Oh, man.
So the thing that I remember most about day one is having the stroke. And two, in the evening, a physical therapist came up and said, "We're going to take you for a walk." And she had a belt that was about 2 inches wide. And she put it around my waist and she walked me around the nurse's station. And I would say kind of walked. I was kind of like Igor or young Frankenstein. And the only reason I stayed up was because she held me up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So the second day they moved me to a hospital room, and going in, the nurse stopped by the bathroom. She took me in, sat me down, and went out to make my bed. And I had had a stroke because my whole right side wasn't working. Mm-hmm. So I went crash, of course. And my husband and the nurse came in. And that's when my husband decided that no one else would be taking care of me. So he needed to become my own advocate.
Wow. Wow.
Right. There was only one thing wrong. He didn't know how to be an advocate, right?
Yeah, it's definitely a learning curve. I think a lot of us, we're not taught what to do. We kind of put the faith into our doctors, our caregivers, and really we need to have our own, you know, advocacy, but also our own what's going on with us so that we can make sure we get the best care we deserve.
Right. Because what they decide might not be the best.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was one thing. The other thing that I remember from being in the hospital is I had dysphagia, which is a choking disorder. Mm-hmm. And 65% of stroke survivors have it. And I could cough to death and no one would know. Well, they would because I wouldn't be moving around anymore. I'm being a little bit funny, but it really was serious. So the hospital kitchen sent up chicken. So I could be on liquids, but not food. And I didn't know any different. So the first thing I did was, you know, cut up the chicken and started eating and choked, of course.
Ugh.
And the nurse came in and she chastised me and I'm going, okay, so I've lost my whole upper thinking, right? I don't know. There's food. I think it looks good. It smells good.
And you're like, it's brought to me. So you would think that someone is in charge of figuring out what is supposed to happen and the double checks as to what the plan is supposed to be. Because, yeah, we always see the little tags on people's, you know, charts or you know, even wristbands like fall risk, all that stuff.
Right.
Huh.
So that really got my husband upset. Mm-hmm. And driving home that night, he called my sister who lives in Seattle and said, and so it's the end of tax season. She's a CPA. And he says, please come. And the night before she'd said, I don't know if it'll be that soon. And when he called and said, this is the first time I've actually been afraid. Yeah. She said, I'm coming.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I hope everything for other people goes better than it did for me.
Absolutely. I mean, that's scary in and of itself. And I think that I've heard similar stories with different conditions, even as to what to do, how to take care of things, where to move forward. So once you got out of the hospital, what was the next steps? What did you guys take? What did you do? What did your husband do? How did you get the care that you needed? I'm guessing you found a PT or you were doing exercises your own to try to restore the speech and restore movement.
So I spent 4 days in the hospital and then 2 weeks in the rehab hospital.
Okay.
And they had speech therapy, occupational therapy, and physical therapy for me. Wow. Every day, except on weekends. And then I went home and I had all three modalities of therapy for 6 weeks. Wow. Then I had 2 weeks off. And then I had about 8 weeks in outpatient care. And despite that, when I was done, I hired a physical therapist and she worked with me for a full year.
Wow. That's something, you know, I think a lot of people balk at paying the money for this type of care. But I think this is something to note that how important it is to have that continuance of care, because I will see folks get to a progress to a certain point and then they're like, well, my insurance is up. This is what I got.
Right. But if you stop with where insurance stops, you're not better.
Yes.
You're maybe some better, but you're not all the way better.
I was going to say, how much percentage do you think you were better before insurance gets kicked off? Because I think this is a really huge point to make for folks to understand that they have to advocate for more care or they have to, you know, come up with a.
Right. So I can't say a percentage because I used to say a lot. I was so much better. So it wasn't that much better, but I kept telling myself you're so much better. So I could walk. But I couldn't walk in a straight line. Okay. I couldn't walk backwards. I couldn't skip. So there's a whole lot of things that I just couldn't do yet, or I could do kind of.
Okay.
You know, I think walking in a straight line is kind of important.
It helps, you know.
Yeah, it does.
You won't have any fall risk, but then we're also looking at, and I'm making a joke, but you know, you get pulled over by the police and you need to walk straight line. But these are some of the things for folks to be thinking about in terms of how to navigate life post stroke. Yeah. But all that aside, walking is a huge factor. And I think a lot of people don't truly understand that with a stroke, the impact it has on your balance, the impact it has on your coordination as well. And this is where you were saying the skipping, the walking. What other things did you have trouble with that maybe would be everyday life stuff that folks might not think about?
Cooking.
Yeah.
So it took years before I could actually beat an egg again, because you go around and around and around when you're beating. But I did half a round and I had came back straight. So it wasn't actually beating it.
Wow.
So I know that the first time I snapped my fingers, I was so gleeful. Because when you walk, so when I first started walking, my husband was by my side outside, and I was looking down, and all I was thinking of, lift your leg up, put it forward, put your leg up, put it forward, right? So that took a while. And then I realized my arm wasn't moving. So it's like forward, back. So it finally, that started moving a little bit. And then I was going, but my hand is not doing anything. So I had to figure out how to get it snapping again, because at least that's a little movement.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Did you have any resources to think about the snapping, or any resources to think about telling yourself everything that needed to move and anything? No. Wow. Because no. I think a lot of people take it for granted that our brain tells us what to do. We're on autopilot most of the time. And so in this case, you almost had to retrain, or you had to, not almost, you had to retrain your subconscious to work back through every little step. That's, that's, you know, a huge undertaking for any mind to help. Now, did you along the way have any books that you were working on to help you keep positive, to help to give you some strength here to be thinking about things? Because I think that's a huge thing for folks to hear about.
So the first book I wrote, or I'm sorry, I read, was by Jill Bolte Taylor.
Okay.
And she wrote about her stroke, because she's a neuroscientist. And it took a long time for me to read it because I was aphasic as well. And so when I was reading, I could actually understand what I was reading, but I closed the book and I couldn't remember anything that I'd read. But I found that it was comforting to know that she'd had a stroke and she survived and thrived.
Yeah. And I mean, this is why your book is also something that I think, you know, could be extremely helpful. I know can be extremely helpful for folks because you survived, you thrived, and here you are, but also this whole concept of advocacy.
Yeah.
So with your husband advocating for you, I'm sure it became infectious and now you're advocating for yourself.
Well,
how did that go? I know at first it's it's touch and go at first. How did that develop for you? Because I think for a lot of people, you know, females in general, we have this like, okay, you know, I got this. I'm just going to stay in my head and I don't want to trouble anybody, or I don't want to inconvenience anybody. Did you have any of that in terms of obstacles to help with moving forward on your self-advocacy?
Yeah. So my first doctor out of the hospital, my why can't I think of it? It's been a long day.
Okay. It's okay. Wow.
So the first doctor I went to out of the hospital, he just didn't get me. So I fired him.
Yeah.
And found someone that would help me. Unfortunately, she left, I don't know, after a year.
Oh.
So I had to find someone else. But I think most people, if you take someone that doesn't really fit with you and say, well, it's good enough, it's not.
No.
Because you have to mesh really well together. And if you're not meshing, then you need to find somebody you will mesh with. So, go ahead.
I was just saying, it's so important. It's so important in the medical field. And it's one of the things I think we think, okay, I've got into this doctor. I have to deal with this doctor, you know, because that's who I started my care with. And like I explained to all my patients, we're a team. We're working back and forth. If you and I aren't working well as a team, we got to find you somebody that can work with you better, because I'm doing you a disservice by not meshing with you just as much as you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah. So when we went in and had them look at my, I think it was a CAT scan.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you will not have any blood flowing through here again. Okay. I'm going. So I was going, okay. And my husband's going, woohoo. Because he's always worried about another stroke, right?
Right.
So I went to someone who did some nutrition for me, mm-hmm. and I think that because I was working with someone who did nutrition, he actually got it going again. So I have blood flow on the left-hand side.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
So when I went back the next year, they were really shocked.
I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So what was the nutrition protocol? What was kind of the overarching component of the food plan? What do you think?
So I was actually sensitive to a lot of things and I didn't know it. And so when I stopped eating the things that he said I was allergic to or sensitive to, I cleared up.
Wow.
So I had a stuffy nose for years. Every day when I went to bed, I started eating right and that went away.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people kind of poo-poo the concept of food sensitivities or even food allergies in general. Mm-hmm. And when there's stuffiness, I mean, that's a clear reaction, but also I do look at the histamine connection with blood flow. There's a big deal. And that's fascinating that you mentioned that. Did you have IgE? So did you have immediate food sensitivity testing and delayed the IgG?
He took both and I had food on both sides.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I would tell you that I was probably sensitive to at least 20 items. So eggs, milk, gluten, soy. I mean, all the normal things that people eat every day.
Yeah.
And I was eating them. I was eating eggs every day.
Wow. Wow. So not only the high histamine foods, but here we have foods that are inflammatory foods. So my mind, of course, as a naturopath goes back to, could these foods have set you up possibly for enough of inflammation in the body to kind of be one of the factors for having a stroke in the first place?
And you're the first person to mention that, but that could be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't figure out how it would cause a carotid tear, but you know, weakening of the lining perhaps from chronic inflammation, but it's just something I think about, you know, I'm in my mind, I try to go, where did this come from? Right. Where did it happen? So interesting. What else did this nutritionist do in terms of, okay, we took you off the person took you off the food sensitivities. What else was kind of highlighted and encouraged?
Well, he's actually a chiropractor.
Yeah.
And he doesn't treat me for chiropractic, but he does do acupuncture on me.
Cool.
And he did the testing on me, the blood tests. Mm-hmm. And 3.5 years after I had my stroke, he began neurofeedback.
Nice.
And so the National Association of Aphasia, National Aphasia Association says that if you're not cured within 2 or 3 months of having your aphasia, you probably have it for life. So aphasia is this communication disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And 40% is a big percent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're not cured within 3 months, that seems very sad.
It's almost like you would just give up. I mean, those statistics give you that like feeling of like, well, I give up.
Right. So I had a couple of doctors and the first one did laser treatment. And that's also a chiropractor who doesn't treat me for chiropractic. I have a third chiropractor who does, but,
Well, you know, I mean, it's one thing about chiropractors I've noticed, they can branch off into so many different realms of health. And it's fascinating because I think we do get such an understanding of their neurological system because a chiropractor understands like how those nerves come out from the vertebrae and then circulation and you know, going forward from it. That's really neat. Three chiropractors. Wow.
Right. And they all treat you differently from, I'm going to say, normal chiropractor. So I've been seeing a chiropractor since I was 25. So that's a long time.
Yeah.
And I've seen many of them, and they all use a different style. So the one that treats me for chiropractic does very small movements. So you have no bone cracking.
Yeah, there's and, no shear force.
And that works wonders for me. Nice. It really does.
Nice.
So the one who did laser treatment, I saw him 2 years after my stroke, and he said, I don't know if I can do anything for you, but we'll try. And so he put the laser in the pod by my head. He told me to do the cross crawl, which is up, down, right? So you're moving the right leg and the left arm at the same time, and you switch out. So you have that cross connection.
Yeah.
And after 5 minutes, I was done and I left. And I noticed that I could speak a little better.
Huh. Wow.
So we went through, that was probably March. And by August, I was kind of not getting any better. So I asked him if there was anything else, and he said, he'll find out. And the next time I came back, he had a different protocol and he used it on me and it got better. But at a point in time, I stopped getting better, and nothing that he did made me jump the hump.
Yeah.
So I was still looking for a solution. And this third chiropractor said, you ought to try neurofeedback. Right? And I'm going, okay, what is that? And he said, here's the URL, go home, do some reading on it. I went home and I was amazed. So it says it does ADHD, anxiety, a whole bunch of stuff, strokes. But the most important thing I noticed was that 85% of traumatic brain injury survivors get better when they use it. I'm going, okay, now I have to try.
Yeah.
Right? So I go into his office, and he's sticking these electrodes on my head. He's using something, I call it cat spit. It's wet, it's sticky, it's gritty. But he says it's important because he wants them to stick and have a clear connection. So he sticks them on my head. He turns the machine on, and I don't feel anything.
Hmm.
So now I can see my brainwaves going across the computer monitor, but the neurofeedback machine uses AAA batteries, and you have 1/100th of a AAA battery pinging you. And it's so slight, I can't feel it.
Huh. So at that point, you're kind of like, is this thing doing anything?
Exactly.
It doesn't work. This is weird.
Exactly. So afterwards, I was giddy. And I noticed driving home, I could speak a little better.
Wow.
After 16 sessions, I am cured.
Wow.
Or I'm saying I'm cured. I went back for two tune-ups. So maybe I'm not cured, but I'm close enough. So what happened before the aphasia, it was like people were talking and I understood them, but I couldn't communicate out.
Mm-hmm.
When I had neurofeedback and I was done, people would talk to me, the words would form, and I would say them.
Wow. Wow. It's almost like it rewired you in a sense.
Exactly.
Wow. That's great to hear. I have been hearing so many stories about neurofeedback lately. It just keeps coming up over and over again in my practice. And I think this is even better of a concept, because we're talking more on depression and ADD, but this is like really bringing back someone's ability to speak, which I'm not discrediting ADD or depression, but what I'm saying is this is like even more pronounced of a change, because you're going from, you know, difficulty speaking to everything's, you know, coming out like it, like back when before the stroke.
Exactly.
Wow. Wow.
So I am hugely grateful for the people who developed MCN, which is a microcurrent neurofeedback machine. Nice. I'm hugely grateful for Dr. Fuller for inviting me to try it. I mean, until he said the word neurofeedback, nobody had ever said it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's the only one in Virginia who offers neurofeedback, at least that type of neurofeedback. So when you think of neurofeedback, I've read about it. And a lot of times you sit and you go to, okay, move the ball, and you try to move the ball or make the screen bright or whatever. This one, you do nothing. You just sit there.
Wow. Wow. Which I think for a lot of people, like I said, it's like, is this working? What's happening? How does this work? But that's fascinating how we're just rewiring in the process. For folks who are listening, how do we spell the MCN? How is that spelled?
It's micro, okay. M-I-C-R-O.
Okay.
Micro feedback.
Okay. I hear a cat.
Yes, I'm sorry.
No. We love animals on the podcast. I love my golden retriever to death. And it sounds like you've got, what's your cat's name?
Her name is Ellie, and I think she thinks it's dinner time.
Ah, Ellie, just hold on, honey. We got a couple more questions for mama here, and then we'll get going. So we've got I put the feedback there. We're going to make the notes for the folks who are listening in terms of the podcast, guys. It'll be in drjkrausnd.com in the podcast notes. So Marsha, let's talk about your book a little bit so folks can kind of get an idea of how this book fits into their knowledge base, but also where it comes in handy for someone that had a stroke. So say someone's listening right now and they're like, either they've had a stroke or they have a family member that's had a stroke. Tell us a little bit about how the advocacy component of the Stroke Forward book works. You know, are you telling folks, you know, what you need to do? Are we telling about the story? Give us a little scoop.
So it is a story, but it's told by myself, my husband, my sister, some friends, some doctors. Because everybody who is surrounding the person who's had a stroke has a different perspective.
Yeah. How important is it to advocate for yourself and help your caregiver to get some help when these kind of things are happening?
So it's so important because your caregiver and your friends around you are going to shape the person that you will become. Mm-hmm. So you're like a child again. Mm-hmm. And you're growing. And if you're in an environment where you're not surrounded by help and love and support, you're not going to grow. So you have to make sure that they understand that you are a person who's doing the best they can. And it might be that you don't do much at all on some days, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an important thing. I think a lot of people, when we get into chronic illness or we get into recovering from something, we feel that every day we have to be doing so many things to get better. I think there's something to be said about rest.
Yeah. So another thing that really surprises me is so many people ask about sleep. And I'm thinking, okay, you've had a major brain injury. You can sleep as much as you want to, as long as you're not sleeping because you're depressed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you're tired, take a nap. Take two, take 10. Mm-hmm. But when you feel like you can get up, then do. Mm-hmm. Even though it's for maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever, and go back to bed. I mean, that's what I did. So when I was home, I get up, I take a shower, I go to bed. I get up, I brush my teeth, I go to bed. Get up, comb my hair, maybe. go to bed. So I always did my exercises every single day. And if nothing else, then the shower, brushing my teeth, maybe combing my hair and doing the exercises. If anything else got done, woohoo. If anything else didn't get done, that's okay.
I think that's really important for folks to understand, because I think the mindset here is so important in terms of recovery, because we can go down a pathway of unfolding, really, of our mind, and we can go on some really dark downward spiral journeys. Did you, during this process, have any counseling or anyone to help you with mindset? Wow.
So I think they say 1/3 of stroke survivors are depressed. Mm-hmm. So I fell into the not suppressed and net depressed. And I guess I think it has to do with how I think about things. So I've been working on thinking positively for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe I have rerouted myself to think that way anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So having that pre-wiring is always extremely helpful. But of course, you know, for folks who are listening, you know, if you're not a positive person to start off with, it is important to look for help in that case. Now, in terms of caregiver help here, what kind of things did your husband do to take care of himself and also your sister and friends to keep themselves good so that they could take care of you?
So the most important thing is getting rest. Mm-hmm. Exercising and eating right. So if you're a caregiver, you need to do these things religiously, because you have to be in good shape for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do you mind telling us how old you were when you had your stroke?
53.
Okay. So young, because I think a lot of people, you know, as we talked in the beginning, in terms of that 25% from prenatal into the 64 age range, I think that's important for folks to hear. Yeah. the age and how much this is, you know, not the case of someone that is in their 80s and overweight and smoked their whole life or whatever, you know, the case may be. Prior to the stroke, we know that you were eating some of the foods that can be inflammatory, but were you exercising? Were you leading a pretty healthy life?
So I was really fit. I ran 3 or 4 times a week. I would hike in the mountains a lot. I kayaked a lot. Yeah. I had normal cholesterol. So, yeah.
Wow. So no signs that anyone would ever suspect that a stroke could happen.
Yeah.
Wow. So folks, you heard it. Right here from Marsha, that there were no signs. She's super fit, no risk factors. And so, you know, in this case, you know, yeah, there's genetics, but a lot of times I'm looking at what someone's expressing right now and how important it is to really just keep into mind what's going on. But also, I think it's important for all of us to have the education, like Marsha's book, to know what to do if something goes wrong, what to do if things go south, but also more importantly, how to become your own health advocate. So I'm going to have, of course, your book linked to my Instagram, but also on my podcast notes at drjkrausnd.com. Marsha, can you tell folks where else they can find you and where else they can get some support from you?
So they can go to my website, that's strokeforward.com. If they want to talk to me, it's Marcia, M-A-R-C-I-A, at strokeforward.com.
Okay. Okay.
Facebook is strokeforward. Twitter is stroke-forward. No, I'm sorry, underline forward.
Okay.
And I'm Marcia Moran, if they want to call me on Facebook.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, LinkedIn.
Okay. Okay. All right. I've got them all down there. So I will put those on our podcast notes at drjkrausnd.com. Marsha, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your story, giving folks a piece of what, you know, reality is, but also your inspiring story. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Health Junkies, I hope you enjoyed my podcast. If you want to continue the conversation based on what topic I'm talking about at any given time on the Health Fix podcast, head over to my Facebook group, Find Your Health Fix. It's where we are talking about what's going on in health, what I'm talking about in the podcast, and I love to answer questions there. So come hang out and join the conversation. And by the way, right now I have a free Manage Your Stress Naturally course that you can grab on my website at drjkrausnd.com, because so many people are stressed out right now, and really it has to do with the basics, your routines and simple habits that are messing you up. So head on over to drjkrausnd.com and go check out my free course on managing stress naturally. All right, folks, have a great day, whatever you're doing.
Subscribe, rate, and share info.